This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com,
Greens Plus,
and by the 26th Annual Professional Dodgeball Tournament. Catch all the action on ESPN 8, The Ocho.
You know, I can't get enough of that Ocho.
This is the FitCast. I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And with us this week, we have a special guest, Lou Schuler.
Dr. John Girardi.
One-on-one with Craig Ballantyne.
One-on-one interview with Bill Hartman.
I'm Eric Cressy.
Can't forget our shakes this week.
It's a hell of a super shake.
Yeah, let's start off with this week's news. Need any updates for the FitCast to get the show notes with all the links for the show? Just go to thefitcast.com for all your FitCast needs. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. FitCast episode number 14 for July 16th, 2006. My name is Kevin Larrabee.
And this is John Williams.
And this is Alan Cosgrove.
Yes, that's our special guest this week.
Yeah, welcome to the show, Alan.
Thank you very much, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, wait, hold on. I'm getting another call. Let me see who this is. Hold on one second. Who's this?
This is Cassandra.
Hold on. I'm going to add you to the conference. Hold on. No one knows about this. I didn't even tell John.
Oh.
It looks like we have a special guest with us right now just to pop in. Who's on the phone?
Who might that be?
Hi, it's Cass.
Hey, Cass.
How's it going?
Oh, awesome. Good to have you on, too. It's
like, you didn't have enough to say in your last week's three-hour conference that you need to come in on mine? I see how it is.
Yep, I was calling in. I just wanted to say hello. And I was going to do that advertisement, but I heard you were changing it this week.
Yeah, you know, we came up with another little comedic sponsor this time. So next time, since you promised to do it, we'll record it.
Nice. I'll be there.
Very cool. Yeah.
How's everyone doing out there?
Oh, very good. We got a great response from your show last week, and anything you want to ask Alan?
How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you.
Good.
I spent most of today sitting outside by the pool and not doing a whole lot, just to psych myself up for this call.
Doing your homework, huh?
I've been reading Super Training since last week to make sure that I have some good answers.
That's a good talk. And your visit with your dad, that was good?
Yeah, my dad's still here. He's over visiting from Scotland, so I think he's sleeping right now. He's 64, my dad, and the first day he just laid in the sun all day, and I think it broke him. Now he's wiped out.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, cool. It's been good to see him. I haven't seen him in a long time, so it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, I get to see my dad in 2 weeks. I'm going back to Canada. I haven't seen him since Christmas, so it's always nice to see family when you don't see him for a while.
Absolutely. For sure. Hey, Cass, how was that lobster last week?
Oh, my goodness. It was really good. Justin did a great job at making lobster. He's really good. We ate it with pliers, actually. We didn't have any crackers to craft the lobster with, so my mechanic boyfriend here, or mechanically inclined boyfriend, I should say, he pulls out the pliers.
Yeah.
It was great.
I did the same thing with my lobster, the one that we named Claws, the one that we were playing with before we ate. I had to eat him with pliers.
Is that the one that you named and you made a pet out of?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And then killed it.
Yeah, you know, it was a sad day.
Oh, that's not good. You're not supposed to do that. That's like naming your cow, you know? It's not a good thing. One day it's going to be on your plate. No, we're just coming back from the lake. It was Justin's grandma's birthday, and... Good hot day today. We went for a road ride and I wanted to die. It was about 90 degrees on the bike.
Yeah, it was hot over there too, huh? We had record high temperatures today in Denver.
Oh,
all
wow.
Weekend, actually. Yeah. 105. How's the weather?
It's 107 out here right now. But
oh, geez. I mean,
where we live is, it's become a big city, but, you know, 20 years ago it was the desert. You know, so it's just, you go to L.A. and down L.A., Beverly Hills, it's maybe 85, something like that. Mm-hmm. As we're always about 20 to 30 degrees higher, so sometimes it can get Rachel goes off and does ridiculous things like 40-mile bike rides, and I have no interest in doing that. I make all kinds of excuses too. It's too catabolic for me and stuff like that. So that I'm not tested, but she was out yesterday doing a 40-mile bike ride and then a 10-mile run.
Wow.
Something wrong with the girl.
Yeah, we did 30, and that's all I could handle. My back wasn't putting up with it anymore. My boyfriend was being generous by letting me go a little slower. But usually he averages a little faster than I do, so... Yeah, I'm trying to be an aerobic athlete, but I'm more of a lifter, so my body's revolting against me.
I used to train with the track team in college, and they used to jog 2 laps of the track as part of their warm-up. And I used to show up late, because that was a long-ass way. I don't want to do a half a mile. That's far. So I'd show up late, and hopefully that I'd missed it. So I have I just find it very unsatisfying. I mean, I understand the benefits of it, and I make sure that I do some, but I don't know. If that was the only way to get in shape, I think I'd be 400 pounds.
I think everybody who actually joins, or actually gets into weightlifting hardcore, is typically the people who don't like to do intensive cardio.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed. So
I'm not
you have
a cardio
a sympathetic
fan.
Crowd. Yeah, I don't think any of us are.
No, I like to lift, but I just wanted to try something new. The boyfriend was doing all the road riding, and I wanted to spend some time with him.
But that's fun cardio, though. That's the, you're outside, and it's fun. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've been doing 20 minutes on the treadmill every morning to get my, conditioning back a little bit. I mean, it feels like 4 hours.
That's boring, yeah.
I've got everything. I've got a DVD player and a cable TV and everything in the room where the treadmill is. And I'm watching 4 channels at once and a movie and playing the radio. I'm like, all right, it must be almost time up. No, only been 5 minutes.
Well, you should be out there with Rachel. You got to get yourself a road bike
now. It'll be a wee while before I'm out there with Rachel. I get winded coming up the stairs. Since I've been in the hospital, I get winded coming up the stairs. She's off doing a 40-mile bike ride on a cup of coffee. Not for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we do mountain biking, too. That's more fun, I think, than the road biking, but it gives you more bruises.
I think I have a mountain bike that I got last year, and I could see me getting really into mountain biking. The problem is my courage far exceeds my abilities. So right now I've went out with friends who've tried to scare me, and I won't be scared. I'll try anything, only I can't do anything. So we go out for 10 minutes and I've crashed and have to walk home. But I think I could get into mountain biking. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it does seem a lot of fun.
Mountain biking is fun. I can't wait till we go to BC and maybe get some good hills in us, but I don't know. The hills around here in Connecticut aren't the greatest, but we can get some good rides in. It's fun. So.
Nice.
Very cool.
But I should probably let you guys go and continue with the show. Just wanted to say hello and drop in.
Yeah, thanks for dropping in, Cass.
Nice to talk to you, Cass.
It was nice talking with you guys.
I'll talk to you later in the week, eh? I promise I'll send you your program.
Oh, good. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Alrighty.
Okay, have a great show, guys. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was nice.
That's 2 weeks in a row that we've had someone call in.
That's a special guest
regular segment.
I got to stop giving out the Skype phone number. That's what I got to do.
Yeah.
We'll keep butting into the show.
No, dude, we love it. It's good times.
But let's get started with the FitCast news and get that out of the way, because I know everyone wants to get into the Q&A. First off, we have a FitCast forum now. You might notice that if you're on the JP Fitness forums, there's now a forum just for the FitCast. So now you can go to each episode of the FitCast where there's links for the FitCast and then there's discussion. So check that out. There's a link for it up on the fitcast.com as well. The second big piece of news is actually really big is I guess we could say we've launched the FitCast magazine. It's kind of a soft launch because the website's not fully up to speed yet, But we do have a couple of announcements with that. For authors, I already have confirmation that Craig Ballantyne, Eric Cressy, Cassandra, who we just talked to, John Izzo, Galia Talkington, who's a listener of the show, and we've actually talked about her Super Shake. She's a trainer as well. And also, we're going to have articles from FitCast listeners. So it's going to be really exciting to see how that works out, and I'm really excited about it just to see what our listeners come up with and also what our authors are going to come up with as well.
That's awesome, Kevin. I was busy for the weekend. My girlfriend's parents and family were visiting. And I come back and look at the computer, and you've got the whole entirely new segment of the FitCast, the Fit Mag, going on. I'm like, geez, Kevin is ambitious this weekend.
Yeah, I had some free time. We already have a article by Craig Ballantyne up on the FitCast. Well, actually, the website is thefitcastmag.com, so it's just thefitcastmag.com. So you can check that out. There's also a link for it, obviously, on thefitcast.com as well. So that's just a big announcement. Keep a lookout in the next week or so. We're going to have some big developments on that. A friend of the show, Gabe, also Deserve on the JP Fitness Forums, has given me a hand with setting up the website for it to make it a little bit more professional and make it a little bit more easier to access for the writers. So I'm really excited about it, and it seems like everyone who's going to be writing for it's excited about it. Just another way we can branch off from this show. So again, keep a lookout for that. Next piece is, again, I'm going to mention the FitCast newsletter this week. For those of you who signed up, thank you very much. We've gotten a great response. We got over 200 people that have signed up for the newsletter so far. And also, starting next week, subscribers of the FitCast newsletter are actually going to get a link to download the show 12 hours before it's released on iTunes and to everyone else. So if you haven't subscribed yet, go to thefitcast.com and subscribe to the newsletter. That's just one of the many benefits you're going to get, along with tips and articles that are not found on thefitcast.com and also the FitCast mag. So we're going to have some of those authors that are going to be doing tips and also short articles for the FitCast newsletter as well.
Very cool. Hey, Kevin, how close are you to getting the streaming download for the show? Live streaming.
I'll have that up this week, probably by, let me see, I'm working a lot this week, but probably by Wednesday or Thursday, we'll have live streaming the show up on thefitcast.com, I promise.
Nice, that sounds good.
Excellent.
So you don't even have to download the show, because
it'll be like a radio show. You're going to have to start mixing the music in live.
Yeah, I mean, we could definitely do a couple things like that. I'm going to fool around with it, see what we come up with, but the best I'm going to offer you right now is that you can basically just go to the website, hit play, and you can play the FitCast show right through the website. So it should be really cool.
Very cool.
And lastly, I just want to give everyone a heads up. It's 2 weeks to the FitCast meetup, actually 2 weeks from last Friday, 2 days ago. So it's getting close, getting some ideas together for the video FitCast, and I'm extremely excited to be heading out to Denver. And
yeah, it's going to be a great time.
See what happens. So just a reminder to everyone about that. And also, we got a couple pictures from our FitCast listeners that won FitCast t-shirts. Lisa's already sent in a picture, and also someone else sent me an email right before the show, and I can't remember who it is, so I'm sorry about that, but the pictures will be up on thefitcast.com along with the show notes and all that good stuff, so keep that in mind. But I guess we'll just jump into our shakes really quickly. I'll start off. I'm doing something a little bit different this week. I said I'd come back with something somewhat exciting, but this isn't too crazy. I'm just doing a scoop of vanilla low-carb metabolic drive from BioTest, a cup of frozen blueberries, a half a cup of frozen strawberries, and a half a cup of vanilla low-fat yogurt, also with 8 ounces of water. And it tastes pretty damn good. No, I didn't even have to add any, like, Splenda, no artificial sweeteners, just straight out. It tastes as good as any smoothie I've ever had.
Nice. Good to see you're taking advantage of the summer berry season.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong. It's just this place that's literally 3 miles from my house that's just all fresh-picked berries and fruits and vegetables, and I just have to go down there and spend, like, $25 every week just to get my fruits and vegetables for the week.
Very cool. Alan, are you drinking a shake with us today?
Well, you guys are so very creative. I'm drinking a dihydrogen monoxide mixture, which is very, very potent. But just about 30 minutes ago, I'm pretty bored with my shakes. I had a vanilla biotest shake with a banana in it. That was my last meal.
Nice. How was it?
You guys get creative, and I'll tell you something. This is officially on the record. If you add greens plus to your shakes, it makes them taste like shit. John Berardi can kiss my arse.
Our sponsor probably wouldn't be too happy to hear
I don't care. Drink your greens separately. I mix the greens up and take it in a 4 ounces of water and slam it.
That's what I do too. Or I take the capsules. That's what I do. I just get the capsules. Yeah. It's the same price as the powder, and you can just take 6 capsules, and it's just as good as 3 scoops of the.
Don't get me wrong. I think it's a good product, but I don't think you should be mixing it in your shake. I don't think you want to sprinkle it on your French fries. I don't think you want to mix it in your oatmeal.
It's just a standalone
product
for sure. We've already talked about the oatmeal fiasco we had with the greens plus. Actually, it's not that bad for me because I can't see the green, but most people are turned off by the color green oatmeal. But needless to say, the taste doesn't go very well with the oatmeal either. But yeah.
I guess we're not going to be sponsored by greens plus anymore, but that's all right.
It's an excellent product not to be mixed with anything. There we go. Nice.
That's fair.
That's the rules according to Cosgrove.
Well, I didn't put greens plus in my shake today, but it is a tasty one. I used some almonds and a peach. Got some good peaches out of Costco last week. They're all ripe. They're all ripe yesterday. So I put in a peach, some almonds, and some vanilla muscle milk, and ice, of course. And it's a really, really tasty shake. I would highly recommend it to anyone.
Well, I'm really sad that we're not going to hear the FidCast news music this week, and we didn't even hear it last week either, but probably next week we might get back to it.
I know, people are having withdrawal from the FidCast news theme music.
Yeah, sorry guys, but we're going to jump into what you've all been waiting for. You probably just skipped through everything we just said to get to this, and that's the Q&A with Alan. So we'll start it off. John, you got the first question.
Right. Okay, so these are user questions, and UMass on the JP Fitness forums asks, I'd like to hear the qualities and qualifications that Alan looks for in potential trainers for his training facility.
All right, that's an interesting question. I'll start with the qualities first, because I really don't care much for qualifications. I'm looking for people with a good personality who I think will be good coaches, who I feel have a good work ethic. Training people for a living, if any of you out there are doing it, it can get tiresome. And so I need people with personalities first. There's some well-known coaches out there that I've read their articles and I've met them and I've seen them at seminars who would never get a job in my facility because I don't think they've got the personality for it. So it usually comes down to personality and work ethic. Because I can train them to do anything else I want. Like we all trainers started at some point as a beginner. So I'm not going to disqualify someone from working for me because they have a lack of qualifications. Because I can train them to do very quickly to get to a level above most trainers. That said, the only qualifications that I'm really interested in seeing are from the NSCA. And that's all my staff have to become certified with them within 6 months of hiring, or the NASM, which I like. None of the others I'm really too interested in. I'm not going to name certification names, but I've just not been impressed with the quality of their certified people. So mm-hmm. it's usually just more of a work ethic, personality, attitude type of thing that I look for. Not so much training ability. Mm-hmm. Does that answer the question well enough?
Yeah, sure. What about these NSCA certification? How long does it take to get that?
The failure rate is so high. It's why I like that one. that's the honesty is that they don't. I had one staff member take another certification once, and not study for it at all, and pass it. which just disqualified that certification as being any good for me. But the NSCA, usually when we're working for me, it takes maybe about 6 weeks of studying and going through it, and then it's just a one-day exam, but it's administered by an outside governing body, which is, a lot of the times, a certification agency. They teach the material for the exam, they administer the exam themselves, and they mark the exam themselves. So it really has no validity. The NSCA have an outside body come and administer the exam and grade the exam, and they have nothing to do with that. So as a result, whether the content is something you agree with or not, is a whole other topic, but at least it's a valid exam. You know, it's administered under exam conditions, same as, you know, college exams and stuff, which gives it a whole lot more credibility in my eyes. So that's the one I encourage my staff to take. And at this point, it's still largely recognized as one of the better certifications, so that's why I have no problem with my staff taking it. But we get applicants with all kinds of backgrounds, but one of my best trainers ever was a school teacher who had never trained anybody before ever, and he just had a great attitude and he was really good with people and a great personality, and he went pretty far. My top guy right now, he has a degree in the field, but this was his previous job was in sales, and he's just, you know, fantastically. His name's Cameron McGar, and he's gonna go places in this field.
Very good.
Well, the next question is from your good friend Mahler, who is actually, just to mention, is going to be one of the writers on the FitCast magazine as well. So,
oh, excellent.
Had to give him some props there. His question, the workouts and the new rules of lifting are amazing, and I have seen some great results in fat loss and strength. I would be interested in learning the thought process behind putting together workouts that have such impact.
This will be a short answer, right? So he wants to see the method behind the madness, or the madness behind the method, I suppose. The problem is when you write a generic workout like that, just by looking at a bell curve, is it's only going to work well for about 68% of the population. Mahler has been a perfect response to it. He's going to be the poster boy for the book, I'm pretty sure. He's just done fantastic gains. But I have emailed him and sent him some messages with a couple of little tweaks on it. So perhaps it's like I see little things in his training log that jump out at me. Where it comes from, the fat loss stuff, there's a school of thought right now that is on training for fat loss, that your training program should remain the same and we just adjust your diet. And there's so many flaws in that argument that I'm not even going to begin to touch it. But basically, the fat loss programs were designed to create as much what I call metabolic disturbance as possible, so that it burns a ton of calories while you're doing it, yet it raises your metabolism significantly for a longer period of time afterwards. Something which the steady state aerobic stuff, that's one of the flaws, it never raises your metabolism long term. So that's the reason for that. So part of the reason it's so effective is just because it's just flat out hard work. And I've sequenced it so that people can do much harder work than they thought, by the way I've set up some of the exercises. But most people who've been through it will see that there's nothing really magical about the fat loss stuff. It's just a lot of work to create that metabolic disturbance. The strength workouts are based largely on neural adaptations, and it really comes from, it's modeled over a powerlifting type of routine. The only thing that I do is I train the shoulder girdle in four movements, a horizontal push and pull and a vertical push and pull, where most powerlifting concentrate on the bench press. So it's a bastardized form of a powerlifting program. So most of the adaptations are neural-based. So it's the thought process behind it is just to think of the typical person starting these programs and where I think they would be and where I want them to go. And actually, I work backwards from there. So the first programs that I wrote were the last ones, and then I wrote them backwards from there to say, all right, this is me taking it back another step right through the beginner workouts, through to what we call the break-in phase. And the biggest response I've got from a lot of people is that the break-in phase just killed them, because the reps were a lot harder and the rest periods were a lot shorter than they were used to. So I think it fitted together. The book has come together really well. And it's also, over the last few years, there's been, other than Mike Mejia's work over at Men's Health and then the Homegrown Muscle series and Ian King's work, there's actually very few programs out there that change on a month-to-month basis. So often some of the people doing the new rules of lifting, it's the first time that they've followed a structured program. Like, there's a lot of workouts out there where people write out up a month's worth of workouts, or they show here's a shoulder routine, but it doesn't fit into a plan very well. So this is often sometimes that the reason that it's successful is because it's the first time people have followed a more long-term plan. So, but I appreciate the nice comments from Mallard. That was nice.
It's definitely one of the most balanced programs I've ever used, particularly with respect to the legs. You know, most programs will focus to some extent on the upper body, and my legs saw a great benefit from the new rules. So even in the phase one, it was amazing. You know, just those body weight exercises you had us doing.
A lot of people don't. It's interesting. As someone asked me once that, you know, I think I'd be bummed if I came to your facility and he was only doing bodyweight exercises, but I don't think anybody notices. Like, I don't think anyone really, they just see it as hard training. They don't mm-hmm. notice that the lunges, they aren't using any external load. They're usually quite pleased because they're exhausted anyway.
Yeah, so for sure.
It's interesting because Lou and I have talked about this, that we finished the book, I think, midway through late 2004. And with the reviews and everything, it didn't come out till late 2005. And really only now is it starting to get known. But it's weird, it's so long ago, you're like, well, would I have done some things different? You know, because I continue to learn. You know, would I have written different workouts? I probably would have. You know, if I was to rewrite it today, it would be a little different than it appeared. But
well, that's a good
I'm
question.
Happy with it.
How would you change it?
I would have made the transition between the fat loss, either fat loss and strength or hypertrophy and strength, are not as smooth as I would like them when I look at it as an overall program. Mm-hmm. So I would probably have two transition phases, where you're either going from fat loss to hypertrophy or hypertrophy to strength or whatever, where I have somewhere in the mid range. You know, the obvious one for the fat loss would be I'd keep the reps high, but I would maybe do a squat or a bench press row complex in the beginning, with two to three sets of like 5 to 6 heavy reps. And that would transition a lot better between the phases, I think.
Nice. Excellent. Well, by the way, if there are any listeners just tuning in for the first time, we've talked about this book from Alan and Lou Schuler, The New Rules of Lifting, several times, but definitely go out and get a copy. And what is it? It's like $10 on Amazon.
It's $16 today. I checked it. I put a link up on the website today, actually. So
yeah, you can get it pretty cheap. So it's
yeah.
It's well always interesting when I get emails from people like, I'm wondering if I should buy it. And my theory on it, I've never gotten dumber from reading any book. So at some point, the time taken to think about whether or not to buy it, it's $16. If you don't like it, Amazon will take it back from you. But I'm sure you'll learn $16 worth from it.
However, I think I have found the exception to the rule that you can't get dumber from reading a book. I just read The Alphabet of Manliness from Maddox. and that was definitely, I mean, it was hilarious.
But, and your IQ points went down?
Yes, absolutely. Good times, though. It's a funny book. Okay, so the next question also has to do with the new rules. It's from Curry on the JP Fitness forums. And he says, I, too, have recently enjoyed the book and the programs and like to ask, what recent research has piqued your interest?
Well, I mean, obviously, with the past few months, my own personal interests have changed. So there's a couple of things in training and nutrition that I've seen. I'm working right now on a real-world fat loss seminar, and it's interesting that there's very little research to show that aerobic work does anything for fat loss. Like, this has always been my position, but it's interesting when I look through the research, I can't find a whole lot of evidence that aerobic training does anything. All the low-carb stuff that Cassandra presented last week is just fascinating stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that's great stuff. There's some research I was reading recently on a product on which I'm probably going to mispronounce it, called glyceric acid, which comes from licorice root. Huh. And they were using a cream for the lower body for females, and it reduced subcutaneous fat. This is a real study. It's on PubMed. And it was using for the first time a topical cream that actually seemed to reduce the subcutaneous fat stores.
Wow.
So that interested me, because I'm interested to see what kind of how the mechanism works. I have some ideas. My own, one of the anti-nausea drugs that they gave me when I was going through chemo had the blocks serotonin. So after about 5 days on it, I got really depressed, like ridiculously depressed. So some of the ways to manipulate your hormones and some of the chemicals in your body through exercise, mm-hmm. to prevent or alleviate depression. I mean, I know this has been covered a lot. That kind of fascinates me, that you could do something like that. And I've also been looking at some nutritional interventions for cancer patients. The two that seem to come to light as being really powerful are one called lactoferrin, which is found in whey protein, and one called curcumin, which is a spice extract that actually seems to destroy cancer tumors when consumed. Wow. I have a real belief that I think the breakthrough in cancer research is going to come from nutritional products. I don't think it's going to come from drugs or chemicals. I think that just if you look at the research on lactoferrin and curcumin and some of the research recently on prostate cancer with resveratrol and some other extracts, there's something there. There's enough evidence there to make you start to think that these things could be used. And the MD Anderson Cancer Research Place in Texas, which I believe is where Lance Armstrong was treated, they're doing a lot of research into curcumin. So it's not a new age hype thing. There's some real science behind it. So mm-hmm. unfortunately, there's not been too much research on training that's really piqued my interest. But to be honest, that having talked to a few guys about this, the funding is just not there. Like, it would be great to fund a multi-million-dollar study to see which fat loss program worked the best, but no one's going to fund that. Mm-hmm. So we're left with, I have no interest in what people just come in straight out of college have to say on anything. I'm interested in what practitioners are doing and what they're seeing, because their livelihood is on the line, and I see what they're doing and how they're making money and how they're getting results. And I'm always interested to see, if someone's been financially successful and has a good reputation as a fitness trainer, they're usually doing something well. And I may not agree with everything that they're doing, but I'll still learn something. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the research I see is just talking to other trainers and coaches and seeing what they're doing.
Very nice. You know, this wasn't in one of our questions that we sent in to you, but again, for the listeners who don't know, Alan is a cancer survivor, and we're extremely happy to have him on the show since you just got out of the hospital. Don't mean to get too esoteric on you, but what sort of lessons do you learn as a cancer survivor in relation to your field, to the fitness and nutrition field, or to life in general?
That internet forums and arguing on them is a waste of time. That's number one.
Absolutely. Better things to do with your time.
Yeah, this is the second time I went through it. Unfortunately, I was diagnosed July 2004, and went into remission February of 2005 and relapsed this year and had a stem cell transplant, which is a fairly aggressive procedure but is standard with the type of cancer I had as the next step. You know, nothing stays the same after a doctor tells you that. Like, everything changes. So the biggest thing is I have no business wasting my time arguing with people. I don't debate anything with anyone. Mm-hmm. You know, I just you're aware of unfortunately, to appreciate life, it took me face to face with death, mm-hmm. which is everybody out there, just this sounds like the kind of things your grandfather tells you, but like it took me being confronted with my own mortality to start really appreciating everything that I had in my life. So
right
now I've become far more content, I'd say. I start looking a little more at overall stresses on the body, not just training stresses, mm-hmm. Looking at other things. I have no family history at all of the disease, so I'm fairly certain that it was some environmental stress mm-hmm. on my body that caused it. There's the argument, is cancer completely genetic or is it completely environmental? Well, in my case, having had no family history of it at all, it seems to indicate that it was an environmental issue.
Mm-hmm.
So you start becoming aware of stuff like that, and without being paranoid, you start looking at, is there the house I used to live in was quite near some power lines,
mm-hmm.
and there's some indicators of childhood leukemia with kids that grow up near power lines.
Really?
So there's something to it. I can't, perhaps it didn't cause my illness, but it certainly didn't help it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think anybody would say that's a good idea to live near them. That'll help you fight cancer.
Right.
So things like that start to come more to the forefront, And like I said, my interest in research becomes, this is a field I don't know about. I have to look at the research. You know, with training, I have my own gym and my own staff and a bunch of friends in the field. I can look at them. So this is something else that I'm looking at. Like, everything my doctor would do, I'd look it up on PubMed and be like, wow, my doctor's kicks ass. He's right on the cutting edge,
Excellent. Well, very good lessons
for
everyone
just,
to learn, too.
Basically, the lesson I want to say is, I don't want to get all religious on anybody, but you just got to appreciate all the good things in your life, because your world can get turned upside down. I found a lump in my thigh, and I was in the shower one morning and went to the doctor to have it checked out, and a month and a half later I found out it was a tumor.
Wow.
Once we'd had it extracted and had surgery. So your world can turn on a dime, and everything changes when you hear those words. So
sure.
just appreciate everything you have. And that's
sure.
it from me. Good night.
Wow. We're just so happy that you're out again. Out
Not
of
as happy as me.
I bet.
Well, let's jump on to the next question. It's from Milkman21. Squats seem to be a scapegoat for trainees with knee problems. But what do you think is really the most common weight training exercise that leads to the knee trouble?
If I was to choose a weight training exercise that is bad for the knees, I would choose leg extensions. However, I think it's a lack of leg training that leads to the knee trouble. Like, I don't think it's rarely too much of an exercise with most people. It's usually a lack of an exercise. We'll occasionally get someone comes in the gym and the doctor says that I can't do any squats. I'm like, I always have to call the doctor. So I'm like, do you honestly mean that this client, they're not allowed to bend their knees to 90 degrees or more for the next 6 weeks? They're not allowed to drive, sit in the car, take shit, whatever? Is that what you're saying? And of course that's not what they're saying. I'm like, well, that's what a squat is. You have the visualization of it being with a bar on the back and heavy, and it's going to be stressful. But sitting on a chair and standing up is a squat. So at some level, it's unlikely that that's going to be the problem. So Dan John has a great quote that I'm paraphrasing a little bit, that squats don't hurt your knees. The way that you squat hurts your knees. Mm-hmm. So it's often an incorrect technique, but I would say it's the biggest thing is a lack of weight training on the lower body that leads to the knee trouble. You know, I don't think it's too much squatting there, but leg extensions do. I just think that the risk to reward ratio for leg extensions is skewed way too much towards risk.
Yeah. For sure. Well, another question from Keith, from Keith on the forums. He asks, what exactly is included in the Professional Fitness Coach Program design manual? And can you give us a better description of the product?
What's included? Not much. Can I give you a better description? No. All right, Keith. Essentially, it was my staff training manual on how to design programs. That was the sort of genesis of the entire project, is that I got asked to speak a lot on program design, and I had a staff training manual, and I just expanded it. So essentially what it is if you were working for me in my facility, this is the staff training manual that I use to teach you how to design programs. It doesn't teach advanced programs or rehabilitation or anything like that. It's just basically the variables that go into designing a program. And I'd venture to say most trainers go through a list of exercises when they write a program, whereas there's far more to it than that. That's what I consider to be the least important variable. So essentially, it's Bill Hartman wrote a really nice review of it that's on the professionalfitnesscoach.com website. But the best description I can give it of it, it's what I expect my staff to know before I pay them to write programs. So it's when they finish it and pass a test that I give them, they then get paid to design programs. So that's essentially it. And that's really what the real world fat loss manual is going to be. It's going to be research backed, but it's largely going to be, here's what we do in my facility to get fat off of people, and we have a good reputation for it. And I'll, without sounding really arrogant, I am compensated very well for the results that we get with our people. So I'm just going to share what we do, and I'll let people debate whether they like it or not, and I'll continue doing what we do.
Where can you get it?
It's gonna be launched probably when I get. I've been a little busy last couple of months, Sean. Last couple of months I've been tied up, so I'm a little behind on it. But I'm hoping it'll be done mid August towards nice. September. I'm gonna do a seminar in Connecticut in September for Ryan Lee, and that's the topic. And if I don't have the product finished at least by then, Ryan Lee will have my ass in a sling, because he's my one of the product development guys that I really respect. But his idea is that when you should only teach a seminar on stuff that you have more information on, and it's something that I've been to so many seminars and the speaker, that's all he has. And I'm like, do you have a book? Do you have a manual? Anything? He's like, no, this is it. And I'm like, that is horrible. You know, I need more information. So his theory is that you don't speak on it unless you have, you know, everything backed up. So I'm hoping to have it ready probably mid-August.
Nice. We look forward to it.
A lot of it's just with me getting, you know, really back into the swing of things, and I'll get it done quickly at that point. But as I said, I've been distracted for the last, you know, 90 days or so.
Understandable.
I just wanted to add that I got to check out a copy of the coach program design manual, and when I was at the JP Fitness Summit, and it's awesome. Like, for anyone who's like wants to become a trainer, or if you're in college like me right now, like I'm picking it up probably in 4 weeks or so at the end of the summer, once the money evens out and all. But that's something you have to have. I was really pissed off I didn't win that in the raffle, and I won a men's health T-shirt and a JP Fitness hat though. So
that's just as good.
No, yeah, it was pretty good.
I got a JT Fitness hat. I don't have a Men's Health T-shirt.
Oh, there you go.
Despite being under contract to Men's Health right now, how do you like that?
Huh?
I'm getting robbed.
Yeah.
Oh, that just reminds me. I'm gonna have to edit this. Edit the swears out, but that's all good. Damn you, iTunes.
You just beep them up.
Yeah, I'll probably just blank them up. But let's jump into the next question, and that is from our good friend BFG, and he just had to ask this question. I really wanted to hear the answer. What's your take on fasted cardio?
Fasted cardio. This has got to be a trick question. I think let me see, because it's going on iTunes, I'll have to give my politically correct answer.
No, you can do whatever you like. I mean,
the problem is that steady state aerobic training at a low intensity, which is what we're talking about with fasted cardio, just doesn't burn that many calories anyway, and it does nothing to raise your metabolism. There was an article written on the internet a couple of months ago on 100 workouts to getting ripped. And the author said this type of training burns 200 to 300 calories every workout. Now, if you add that up, it ends up being about 30,000 calories burned over the 100 workouts, which is about 6.5 to 7 pounds of fat in that time frame, which was every other day, ended up being 7 months. It's about 1.5 pounds a month. It's just not significant. So a lot of the ideas on fasted cardio have been to try and upgrade something that doesn't work very well in the first place. Like, if we're looking at, you know, if we do it on an empty stomach, do we burn more fat? Yes, you do, but it doesn't matter what you burn during that exercise. The deficit will always come from body fat stores if you're in a deficit. It doesn't matter if you burn exclusively carbohydrate during the workout. By that logic, a sprinter would have to be fat because they do nothing aerobic. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've seen some studies that, you know, sprinters are as lean or leaner than marathon runners. Well, if a marathon runner does 2.5 hours of aerobic work and a sprinter does 10 seconds of anaerobic work and they get the same fat loss benefits, then we can see that it doesn't really work. So basically my problem with the argument has been that low-intensity, steady-state aerobic training does so little for fat loss anyway. It doesn't matter what we do, whether we eat toast and then do it, or we eat it, we do it, and then eat toast. It's not going to contribute a whole lot anyway. And it's just there may be, if you were a pre-contest bodybuilder looking to lose those last few pounds, we're looking for every little edge we can get. And then some of these methods have more validity, but like I said, it's for the average person. It does very little, you know, whether you don't eat, whether you're hungry, whether you're not hungry, whether you're thirsty or not thirsty. It's not an effective training modality, really.
Right, losing the forest for the trees.
Exactly. We're focused on, and I forget who said the term first, but we're focused on the minutia of the training there. You know, it doesn't work very well anyway, so let's stop trying to upgrade something that doesn't work and come up with something completely different in the first place. And I didn't even curse. How'd you like that, Kevin?
That was beautiful. That's beautiful.
Well, Lost Dog asked another question. He says, is it harder for people who've lost a lot of fat to lose those last few pounds than it is for people who've lost less fat in general? And do you have any special techniques specifically for the formerly fat people?
Technically, it's not if they have to lose the last few pounds, it's not any harder than someone who only has those few pounds to lose. However, there's a tendency for those people who have lost a lot of fat to have been dieting for longer and to have some metabolic shutdown because of it. So if you're looking at someone who has 5 pounds to lose or 10 pounds to lose and someone who had 50 pounds to lose and has already lost 40, technically it's going to take the same work for both of them to lose it. However, the person that's already lost a lot of weight is usually experiencing all the negative things about long-term dieting and training. So they usually need to go through some kind of a dieting break, and you know, the use of what my friend Lyle McDonald calls refeeds, where you basically eat some more calories and try and increase your metabolism a little bit over a couple of days, and just break the psychological monotony of dieting. So my special techniques for the formerly fat are often to put them on a hypertrophy program and have them increase their calories slightly, even if it's just for a 4-week period. What tends to happen is their body fat maintains. They may gain a little weight because the glycogen stores are being refilled, and they maybe gain some muscle. But then it allows us to go into a fat loss phase again and see accelerated progress. So rather than do, you know, 2 months of dieting, I'll do a month of hypertrophy work and allow them to relax their diet a little bit, and then a month of hard dieting. And over those 8 weeks, I'll surpass any results they could have got by just going 8 weeks straight. So it's not really that it's harder because they've lost a lot of fat. It's just that they've probably been dieting for longer, and they see all the negative side effects with that.
Why do you think these negative side effects are there? Is that something related to the metabolism slowing down? Yeah, or?
Largely it's related to the metabolism. And basically the amount of calories needed to maintain your weight or to lose fat at 200 pounds are significantly higher than now you're down at 160. Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking for, you know, you're aerobically fitter, you're in better condition, so every workout actually burns a little less calories. You know, you need less, so you need to just... You're always going to look at that metabolism, and John Berardi's done some good bringing it to people's attention with the whole G-flux principle. The idea that, you know, if you eat less and exercise, that, you know, we're really looking at that's a perfect way to slow down metabolism. Mm-hmm. And eventually, with these people who are losing a significant amount of weight, that becomes an issue. Whereas if we look at John gives a lot of examples of athletes who increase their training massively and can increase their calories, and that ramps everything up. So the key is to take that concept, you know, if we can eat, if eating more increases metabolism and doing certain exercise increases metabolism, how can we use this with the average person to break through that? So it's it's more related to the, you know, metabolism slowdown and just the fact that it requires a lot less calories at 160 pounds to maintain your weight than it did at 200. It's compounded with the fact that your metabolism's slowing down because you've been depriving it for so long.
Right.
We get into a situation where we're really looking for the best thing is to give them a little break. Unfortunately, right now there seems to be the idea that you're either cutting or bulking, and that's your two choices. That you're either trying to get leaner or you're getting fatter. And there's room in there for some kind of transition work where you're not trying to lose, you're trying to maintain and let your body adjust to this new set point.
Right.
So that's
very good.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
Next question is from the person that popped in earlier, Cassandra. She asked.
Sandra doesn't get to ask her question. She's an expert. She can answer questions.
That's what I was telling her in the emails, and she's like, "Oh no, you have to ask this question." So, I guess I owe her that much for coming on the show this last week and dealing with us. So, for the woman that holds most of her body fat on her glutes and thighs, because some women hold it in their stomachs, what would you do with her training to help her reduce this fat and keep it off? Specifically, discuss resistance training and cardio guidelines. I don't know if she's kind of talking about a transition into the next book.
Yeah, she
that
is.
You guys
she's
are
a
working
good girl.
On, but
she's given us a extra plug for the book.
It's all good.
So, for those of you that don't know, Cassandra Blue Schuler and myself are co-authoring. Co-authoring is the wrong word. They are co-authoring a book that I am providing the programs for that will be aimed at females, and I provide a training program specifically for females, which, to be honest, this will probably kill my sales. It won't be that much different than what I would do with males, but females still don't understand that, which is the premise of the book. Okay, so a woman that holds most of her body fat in the lower body, there is a school of thought that I don't necessarily subscribe to, but I wanted to bring it up, that the location of where you store the fat is indicative of a hormonal profile. And so if somebody who stores it very much in the abdominal region and has skinny arms and legs by comparison, they have a different hormonal profile to someone who... We've had a female before at the gym who... if you saw her from the waist down, she'd appear to be extremely obese. And from the waist up, you could see all her abdominal muscles. So there is something to that. And the
J-Lo.
Yeah, I mean, J-Lo is like a... This girl was a far bigger example. Like, she had... her butt was twice the size, and you could see all her abs. There is a... The school of thought is that those females with the lower body profile are deficient in growth hormone and IGF-1. So I'm not totally sure, and I haven't researched it enough. One of the things that I do use is a protocol I learned from Lyle McDonald, which is a stubborn fat loss protocol for cardio, which involves 15 minutes of interval training, basically, and then a 5-minute break. And what happens during the 5-minute break is there's a massive increase in blood triglycerides, which shows that the interval training is mobilizing the fat stores mm-hmm. and getting into the blood. And then you follow it up with a 30 to 40 minute higher intensity but still steady state aerobic protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And what this tends to do, the idea is you have two problems with fat stores. One is getting the fat out of the cell into the bloodstream mm-hmm. and then burning it off. So the interval training seems to be more effective at mobilizing these stores, and then the aerobic training in this case will burn them off. So that's the cardio routine that I would use. The resistance training guidelines would be similar to the fat loss guidelines in New Rules of Lifting, where I would superset a lower body exercise with an upper body exercise and keep the rest periods fairly short. The thing I'm looking for there is to increase lactate as much as possible, which will indicate that that's happened when the client starts feeling really nauseous. So that's what you'd have to look forward to if you were my client. That that type of training is kind of nasty, but that's what I would do. And I'd probably try that glyceric acid topical
cream
solution that I was talking about before.
Yeah. That's for the pear-shaped or the apple-shaped? Okay.
I'm not sure. I've not seen any research on it. For apple-shaped people, the idea is that they are... I'm not sure exactly off the top of my head, is that they have more of a problem with insulin, which I think is true, because I've seen, you know, a lot of diabetics have problems with the skin, you know, the abdominal area is fatter than the rest of their body. So there could be something to that, but I confess I haven't really looked into it. But it's always interesting when a lot of females think that's how they hold their body fat, but when I measure them, they actually have a very normal fat distribution, which is that for most females, their abdominals are the leanest, their triceps are sometimes double what their abdominals are, and their thigh can be double what their triceps are. So it's a lot of the times they'll say, yeah, I hold it all on my lower body, but when I assess them, that's not the case. So here we go.
Awesome.
Well, good. Well, do you have any future projects or articles that we should be on the lookout for, Alan?
Well, I'm going to bring out Afterburn 2, which is a sequel to my fat loss manual, which will be for a little more advanced fat loss protocol. I have the book coming out with Lou and Cassandra, and I have what is tentatively titled Real World Fat Loss, and which is really the approach that we use at my gym to getting people lean. And I'm just going to go through some of the research and some of the current trends out there. I'm going to go through fasted cardio and this idea that, you know, training doesn't change, just your diet changes, and expose the flaws in that argument. And then I'll just show basically what we do. So it's going to be, I don't enjoy writing programs because, you know, I'll get an email from someone like, I'm doing new rules of lifting, but I've had shoulder reconstructive surgery and I can only get 5 dips. What should I do? I'm like, you don't qualify to do that program. You need to get your shoulder fixed. And so I prefer to provide templates for people to work from rather than laying out programs. So the real world fat loss manual will be more of a template type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, it's just back to superhuman health, and you know, you'll start seeing more of me again. Some of you out there don't even know who I am. I've been so quiet for the last while.
Excellent.
Well, thanks for the reintroduction.
Absolutely.
Before we end the show, I just want to send out a huge thank you to our sponsors. First off, TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. And also Greens Plus. Greens Plus for health, and it's also Alan's favorite product.
Yep.
Keep that in mind, everyone.
Especially when mixed with nothing.
Exactly. That'll pretty much wrap it up for this week's episode of the FitCast, FitCast episode number 14. I want to thank Alan so much for coming on the show. It's a huge, huge pleasure, and I thank you so much.
Thanks, Alan.
I appreciate
it. It was a great time.
Thank you.
And for the FitCast, I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And I'm Alan Cosgrove.
And we will see you next week on the FitCast. Don't forget to check out thefitcast.com for all the show notes and direct downloads, and also thefitcastmag.com. Give that a look and let us know what you think. You can always send me an email and give some suggestions or make fun of me. I'll see you next week on the show. See you. I just want to ask you a quick question. Do you know Tony G? He said that he wanted me to ask you if you knew or if he was ever going to get laid by, who was it?
Jennifer Garner.
Jennifer Garner, yeah.
The funny story is I was in Connecticut last year for a seminar, and I was meeting a friend of mine that I'd known for years, and at the time, Eric Crissy worked for him. And I never met Eric, so Eric said, you know, can I come along and meet you guys? So I was like, sure. And he brought Tony along. And I don't know why, but I just remembered something Tony had written. I'd remembered his name, and I have quite a good memory for things. And he'd written something about Jennifer Garner. And I was there. We went to this little bar restaurant, and I was there with Jennifer Garner's trainer, Valerie Waters. And so Eric and Tony come in, and I'm like, hi, Eric, pleased to meet you. And he's like, hi, I'm Tony. I'm like, aren't you the guy that's in love with Jennifer Garner? And he's like, yeah, I'm the trainer. And he's like, oh, like, it all perks up. And I'm like, but you'll never, ever, ever, ever sleep with Jennifer Garner. And then he's going to kick my ass, but I might blend into the crowd.
Well, I guess that settles it.
No, he's not.
Now, maybe we can get Jennifer on the show sometime and she can let us know. Maybe she's not busy.
Yeah, I want to get a sign. I keep asking Valerie for a signed picture from Jennifer that says, Dear Tony, you have no shot. Love, Jennifer.
That'd be awesome.
Oh, poor Tony.